controversy surrounding Metroid Dread, difficulty versus accessibility, challenge versus fairness, the trustworthiness of reviews versus first impressions, and why slapping an easy mode on everything doesn't solve everything. I'm the Well-Read Mage, and this is MageCast. Whether you like it or not, Metroid Dread was big news in 2021, shaking up an industry with a return to form of a series that had helped pioneer a subgenre largely dominated by pretenders and usurpers of the rightful Queen's throne. If that sounded a little hyperbolic, it is. But stick with this episode. You'll find that excellent points are made on difficult issues to navigate. What is for me a refreshing oasis away from the slice and dice blanket statements and axioms of social media. This episode is doubly special in that part of it has been aired already. If you're not following A Gamer Looks at 40 with Bill Tucker, you're going to want to do that after this show. This Metroid Dread episode was part of a larger conversation that Bill hosted on his own podcast, although our conversation kind of got a little out of hand. And so I'm presenting it here to you, with Bill the host and myself the guest. This is MageCast meets A Gamer Looks at 40, the director's edition. Raw and uncut, parental guidance suggested. MageCast is the podcast for conversationalists in a world where we've already stopped listening to each other. You can help support the show with as little as $3 a month by checking out our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/thepixels. You'd be supporting a podcast, a website, a stream, and an artist all at the same time. Thank you, and now let's start the show.
So actually, before we get started on our conversation about Metroid Dread, I would like to do the three questions with you. Not sure if you've listened to any of the previous three questions episode. Basically, what I do is I ask all my guests the same three questions, and then once I get enough answers, I put them all into an episode. And then it's a three questions episode. A collage of people's answers to three specific questions. So if you're game, I'd like to ask you three questions. And if you're game, the first question is as follows. You are, and this is kind of like a basic question, but we'll just go with it. You are given the opportunity to spend 1 hour across the table with a video game character. And in that hour, you can ask them whatever you want and get honest answers. You can pick their brain. Who do you spend an hour with across the table from?
Gosh, any video game character? You know what? And I thought you were going to say any video game creator. And I was going to be like, oh, I know who I want to talk to. But any video game character. In the spirit of what's recently been released, or announced at least, Multiverses. I don't know if you saw that today. Was announced by Warner Brothers. It's like a Smash Brothers knockoff, but with Warner Brothers animation characters, I guess.
Wow, no, I didn't see this.
Yeah, so it has like, I mean, they were MGM, I guess. Warner Brothers owns them now, but sure. Tom and Jerry, Bugs Bunny's in there, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, Batman, huh. Superman, Wonder Woman, some Adventure cool. Time characters. Yeah, it looks floaty, but Batman's in it, and Batman is a video game character. So let me say, because I was trying to think, if I was sitting with a video game character, I would want to pick the brain of somebody who's like really smart. And it is pretty hard to argue that Batman is, I mean, it's pretty hard to argue against the fact that Batman is one of the smartest characters in video games. I would love to talk to him about tactical stuff, about his gadgets, about how he does what he does, about his lifelong trauma.
Yes,
all that
of course.
Sort of thing. Yeah. So
Batman's a good one. I think that's a good one because you would learn a lot. You just learn so much from Batman. I think that's actually a really, really good pick.
I would just be like, how do I start a business? just ask him advice on that. There you go. Super valuable. Go.
Question number two. Now, I know you're a big fan of video game music, almost a connoisseur, I would say.
Hey, thank you.
A connoisseur of video game music. So I think this is going to be right up your street. What song, video game song or soundtrack would you like to have been playing at your birth, at your wedding, and at your funeral?
Wow. Okay. So
It can be different. It can be different for each one.
Oh, okay. So it's a three-part question in three questions. So I did have video game yes. music at my wedding. I almost said funeral. Yeah, yeah, I managed to. We, you know, everybody's on a budget for a wedding unless you're a billionaire,
sure.
I guess. So, you know, to save costs, we're like, we don't need to hire a cringy DJ. Anyway, I'll just put together like a list of music and we'll both kind of, you know, sign off on it or what have you.
Sure.
So my wife actually walked down the aisle to the Hans Zimmer piece, Time, from Inception, that kind of builds on itself until it reaches a crescendo. Cool. We cut the cake to 2001 A Space Odyssey's The Spake Zarathustra.
Yeah.
And video game music was absolutely in there. My wife and I danced to Theme of Love from Final Fantasy IV. It was a string quartet that played it. Not live, but...
yeah, still, that's still cool.
Yeah, it was fun. Birth. Gosh, that's a hard one. I think Birth is the harder one, so I'm going to say Death.
That's good, yeah.
Apotheosis from Austin Wintory from the Journey soundtrack would, I think, be excellent. That or Corridors of Time from Chrono Trigger, nice. Of course.
Yes, yes. That'd be a good one, too.
Yeah, that's a 10-hour video soundtrack. Like, I could just put that on and just let it run for 10 yep. hours. So, but Birth, though, that's hard. Baby Park from Mario Kart. I don't know. I don't know.
What would you like? Like something that announces your entry into the world, right? Yeah. Something that's kind of like, here's Moses. Ba-da, you know, like, what would you...
You know what? I really like the song Introduction from Cuphead by Christopher Madigan. Cuphead has an excellent soundtrack. Maybe Prelude from the Final Fantasy series.
Multiple
iterations of the
that
Prelude.
That might be nice.
Yeah.
Uematsu. Very nice.
At the start of one's existence. That'd be excellent. Now, what about at Conception?
Well, listen, that almost gets too personal. I'm talking about...
You paused for a second like it was a serious question. I know.
My brain said pause. Wait, no, just stop. No. Don't pause on that. Please don't. That's awesome. Well done. Well done. And finally, let's talk about the, maybe not your death, but the end of your life. You're about to retire. After a life lived full and a vibrant full life of successes and accomplishments, you're about to retire. What video game location do you retire to?
Any location?
Any location.
Oh, my gosh. You know, if not for its rigid caste system, Kingdom of Zeal from Chrono Trigger. Of course.
If not for that little thing called...
Right, right. If not for the sheer villainy of it. It's a beautiful place.
Oh, it's gorgeous. You know,
it's fantastic. The village of Arnie, Chrono Cross, somewhere near the ocean, I think would be where I'd want to retire.
Okay.
Ocean's very much a part of my life. I don't know. Somewhere... It's like I've got to be near – I feel like I need to be near some kind of civilization and not so far removed into like this village that's just, you know, just there by itself surviving. Like I'm over kind of trying to do like the farm life and living off the grid and stuff. I grew up like that. So
sure.
Like
sure.
I don't want to do that again. I don't know. If there's a mix of the Kingdom of Zeal and Arnie Village – I'd love to see it. I'm sure there's some excellent like oceanic cities and towns, not Rapture from BioShock. We don't want to do that in this thing.
No. I wonder, I always say for this one, I'm not a big beach person, but I would not mind living in Besaide from Final Fantasy X.
Yeah.
You know, there is – then the other – my other thought with it too is that video game locations are generally not great. Like there's a problem there occurring, which is why they're a location in a video game in the first place.
I got it.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Your own private island from Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Ooh,
because you can like build the civilization.
Is that a cheat kind of thing?
No, it ain't. it's a location, and you can invite other animals to live there, and you can build your own civilization. You got your own private museum. You have all these services that are dedicated to making island life the best, and you have peace and quiet. But you also have a smartphone, so it's great.
That's perfect. Oh, yeah. That's perfect. You have connectivity.
Yeah,
I dig that. That's cool. My previous guest actually said, anywhere in the world of Pokemon. That's pretty good.
Oh, it can I dizzy. Yeah.
Very pleasant.
Yeah.
Very nice. Definitely. I mean, you could even say, I was just thinking, you could say, what's the name of it? The opening town in Earthbound. Usually things are pretty good there.
Why not? Ooh, Summers, if you got
Summers
money.
Might be nice. Yeah. You gotta have some cash to go to Summers, but you know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you retired and you saved up and you could move to Summers.
Good
that's,
point.
That's exactly. Waikiki, essentially. So, I mean.
Yeah, it really is.
I'd like to move there, sure.
Totally. Well, thank you for indulging me in the three questions.
My pleasure.
Once I get enough of these, like I said, I will then create another episode with all these answers. And then I pick another batch of three questions for my next run of interviews.
Cool.
And away this goes.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So we're here today to talk a bit about Metroid Dread, and with that game conversation, talk a bit about difficulty in games, because every time a game comes out that the populace or popular opinion deems to be difficult, the question always becomes, well, A, why is it so hard, and B, why can't the developer give us difficulty settings or sliders, make things easier, give players that kind of choice? And there always seems to be a one side or the other. And so before we get into that conversation, I'd love to get your opinions on Dread itself. You've at this point beat it multiple times. So how many times are you up to?
I beat it 6 times, and my youngest is asking me to beat it again.
Oh, how fun.
For some reason, every day he's like, hey, are you going to play Metroid? He's 4, so he's always like, Metroid Dread? And I'm like, no, Daddy beat Metroid Dread like 100 times already. It's not going to happen. So I beat it 6 times, twice on hard mode, a hard mode speedrun and a normal mode speedrun. The last time on normal was just to see how fast I could get through it. And love it. It's enjoyable. The gameplay is enjoyable enough to me that even though all of its secrets, oh my gosh, I'm talking like a 4-year-old. All of its secrets have been discovered, I still want to play it and just like exist in that universe, in that game. So
cool. I downloaded it last week. Mm-hmm. I got through maybe the first couple hours. I haven't gotten far. I think I've gotten far enough to kind of understand what the game is trying to do, though.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten through 2 Emmy encounters and defeated them, so I kind of get what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not scratched the surface as far as you have, but I've gotten far enough to where I understand what the game is trying to do or trying to say from at least like a thesis statement almost. Like I get what this is trying to be.
Right.
And I'll just put it to you. Clearly, if you've played this beaten this 6 times, did you find it too difficult? Did you find it too where would you rank it as far as like difficulty goes? Because that is a very subjective thing too.
It is
subjective, right? I mean, we'll stay in that world for now, and then we'll kind of talk a little further on.
I think there are some preliminaries that must needs be said.
Okay. Yeah.
So my interest in reviewing and critiquing video games is trying to sort out the difference between what is objective and what is subjective. Meet a lot of people who say 100% everything's subjective. Obviously not. The game is called Metroid Dread objectively. That's what it's called. The game is a 2D platformer. Objectively, that's what it is. The game is fast-paced in comparison to, let's say, Multiverses that came out today that looks sluggish and floaty. That's a comparison that can be broken down into actual seconds and frames. Those are objective things. When we begin to apply qualitative statements to those things, then we need to think in terms of, and I don't want to rehash this because I always talk about it,
that's fine.
Not to belabor a point, But when we apply a qualitative statement to an observation that's objective, that's where we start to potentially get into subjective territory. That's where you stop saying it is and you start saying I like,
right?
Right? Or don't like, or rather, or it is or it isn't. So when it comes to difficulty, I think difficulty is, you know, as you've suggested, a highly subjective area. And that's where I think that people who consume reviews or critiques in whatever form those take, you know, user reviews, whatever those are, they need to be aware of the personhood of the writer or the creator of that review. They need to know who is writing that review, what their tastes are, what their experiences are. I don't mean exhaustively, because nobody can know that.
Right.
But, you know, there are people who have go-to reviewers. And I think that's a really helpful thing to have. There are people who take recommendations specifically from certain friends because they know what those certain friends are into, and they know whether those tastes match or they don't match. And this is in particular why I don't care for general user reviews like on Metacritic. I don't know who these people are. This could have been somebody that just made an account, for all I know, a couple of months ago, and is just review bombing because they're angry at the brand. That doesn't tell me anything about the game. That just tells me information about this random person. And so that's what I tend to look for in reviews and critiques, is what is this person about? And then getting beyond that, what do they say that's actually extant about the game itself? Because a review should be about the game itself, not, you know, whatever they're talking about. Like when we started this conversation, you brought up the fact that, surprise, Metroid Dread ended up being highly controversial. Who had Metroid being a controversial game on their 2021 bingo card? I did not.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You're right.
So, I mean, from its price tag, $60, people are like, a 2D game is not worth $60. I don't care what game it is. You know, whether it's AAA or not, people argued about Samus mannerisms, if she's too robotic or if she's not, you know, expressive or emotive enough. There was all kinds of things. I mean, it being nominated for Game of the Year at the Game Awards, there are people arguing about how it shouldn't be qualified. It's too short. So all of these things.
Wow, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, that it's the fact that it's too short. There's not enough game there.
I don't.
I've had a lot of interesting discussions with a lot of interested people.
Interesting people.
Yeah, I'm interested. Interesting.
Interested.
Fair. Yeah, you know how it goes. So anyway, I just recently actually launched this week my critique for Metroid Dread. I took the time to write up a couple thousand words on it. Spent a lot of time discussing its placement in the series, as far as, you know, how it advances this story of Samus, and spent a lot of time drawing comparisons to Super Metroid, which I've compared to, you know, a story that draws out themes of motherhood, to now Metroid Dread, which is kind of the opposite. And I don't want to get into too much spoilers there. My critique is a spoilers critique as well. So leaving that aside, I did have to critique its difficulty. Stepping back a bit further, again with the subculture wars, when I beat it on hard mode and almost beat it within 3 hours, it was 3 hours and 15 minutes, I put out a tweet that said, Metroid Dread does not need an easy mode.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. A lot of people remember that. That eventually led to me deactivating my account for the weekend, which was actually a really good weekend, dude. I went up to a lake with my family. I didn't pull my phone out at all. It just kind of existed disconnected. I always, when people are like, man, I need a break from social media, I'm always like, by all means,
take
a break from social media. It can be extremely exhausting. I think especially for content creators, if you don't like that term, especially for creators of any sort, it can be exhausting trying to build a community trying to promote your content, whatever shape or form that takes, and then dealing with people that you don't know at all. I mean, people come out of the woodwork and will accuse you of this or that. So merely discussing this subject, merely asking the question, and I knew what I wrote. I mean, obviously that tweet is – it's a short, curt tweet that is designed to incite a reaction. What I did not do properly is direct that conversation to be a conversation about difficulty. Instead, it turned into a conversation about accessibility. I think, personally, that those are two different things. Now, very well-intentioned people, I think, have attempted to make those two things so united, so closely knit, if you will, and I'll agree that they're closely knit, difficulty and accessibility, that they're identical. There was a person who repeatedly shared a video about, and I don't know if you caught this video yourself, but it was about the relationship between difficulty and accessibility. And I saw the video being shared so many times, I decided to watch it myself. Mm-hmm. The video does spend so much time talking about the relationship, yet it states itself that they are not identical. They're two different things, but they're just very, very close together. So I think that one of the difficulties with social media is it's very hard to have a conversation about really nuanced subjects, about really delicate subjects. It's easy to, you know, get into an argument and then start throwing around words like ableist, start throwing around all kinds of insults and name calling and things like that. And unfortunately, I mean, and that's my mistake. It was my thread. I should not have let that happen. I let it turn into a conversation on accessibility and let people accuse me on those things when it should have just stayed on a conversation on difficulty. The reason why I think those are two different things is because it is not right to compare somebody who does not want to practice at a game with somebody who was born blind.
That is a very interesting point, because the way you're phrasing that is I think they are different, because flip it upside down. No, I kind of flip it. It's like basically saying the same thing, but I flip it the upside down. It's like, you know, I can't tell someone who's colorblind get more colors eyeballs.
Like, but you could tell somebody who is not to play the game more.
Right. You can tell, but someone can say, hey, you can work at this and improve at this. However, there are sometimes limitations to what a person can do.
Exactly.
That they may not be able to. So at the end of the day, you don't know.
Right.
Which is why I think it's a fuzzy line.
Right.
But I don't think there is a one-to-one equation.
No. And those are two, you know, we're picking two examples out of thin air. And again, we're picking two hypothetical examples out of thin air. Because we're not talking about specific individuals. We're talking about specific ideas, specific concepts. That was another thing that I tried to raise, is that, you know, we're talking about hypothetical situations, essentially. We're making hypothetical comparisons. I don't think by making hypothetical comparisons that either person is saying people who have these limitations do not exist. Absolutely not.
Right.
But the moment that you say, but what about somebody who's colorblind? Now you're talking about accessibility.
Yes.
The moment you say, but what about somebody who has a difficulty with their motor skills? That becomes an accessibility question. When you're talking about somebody who does not have enough time to play the game or just does not want to play the game. So some people that I talked with were just like, well, the game should just have the ability to skip all the bosses because I don't like bosses. Mm. That's like, Bill, how is that an accessibility issue?
Well, no,
that's just somebody who doesn't like bosses, right?
That's a personal taste that they would like to have catered to.
Right, because they say, I typically struggle with bosses. Now, I think that Metroid Dread, being this kind of interesting modern retro game, really relies on the player having time to practice. When I first played Metroid Dread, It was freaking hard. I was like, easy. Had the hardest time getting through like parries and landing, you know, hits and counterattacking at the exact point and aiming in all these different directions. When I got through the game and came back and replayed it from the beginning, I played like a pro. Yeah. Because I had all that time to practice.
Right.
Now, I get some people do not have that time to practice. When we saw this with journalists who were saying that the game was too hard, I get it. Their job demands that they play through games quickly, that they play as many games as possible in order to reach specific deadlines.
Right.
That's another, you know, issue as far as like what I think critique has to take time. Like you have to spend time with these games. Metroid Dread is a game you have to spend time with in order to get better at. It's just the nature of how human beings work. We practice something. If we do something enough times, we just get better at it normally, automatically. I don't want to speak for everybody on the planet, but that's just how our brains
work. For the most part, that is, I mean, everybody has their limits,
right?
You know, that, you know, we don't know about, exactly, of course, but. But you're right. By and large, if you do something more often, you will eventually get better at it.
Right.
And not to get into a side digression on journalism. No.
And I just bring that up entirely just to say that it's people that just don't have time to spend with the game.
Right. Of course.
And that's nobody's fault. I mean, it's not like I would say if somebody's, you know, working 50, 60 hours a week and they can't have time to play this game, that's not the game's fault. That's not the person's fault. That's just a fact of reality. So the other day, I saw an eBay listing for the Earthbound Big Box, dubiously graded with a list price of $29,999, $1 shy of $30,000. The retro game aftermarket is in an interesting place. I know these items aren't getting any younger, and they certainly aren't becoming any more common, even as interest and demand for games grows. But if you're one of those people who doesn't have $30,000 to drop on a single video game, then you gotta check out JoypadLad.com, the good guy of retro gaming stores. Finally, an online retailer that doesn't expect you to pay proverbial eBay prices at a proverbial Facebook Marketplace listing. He has new wares and sales coming in all the time, so stop by on the regular. You might find retro games, you might find merchandise, licensed and unlicensed. That's JoypadLad.com. Thank me later.
So, to that point then, I was kind of taking some notes as you were talking. Of course, accessibility and difficulty, kind of just stated that I think there's a fuzzy line as well.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's very interesting how you're saying how even critics are not having enough time to play these games. Again, not to get into a journalistic side conversation, but here's the question. Do you think, and I think I know the answer to this, do you think a reviewer should complete a game in its entirety? Not all the secrets, not all the everything, but complete a game beginning to end before writing a review? Or can someone write an objective review by playing half of it?
That's a great question. I've fielded that question before. I think you might have been present at a conversation that we had on that subject before. So again, it depends what you mean by complete. And you were careful to phrase that. You know, if complete is the first credits roll, if complete – like, so let's take Hades, for instance, right?
Sure.
A game that demands you replay it multiple times. You are not going to beat that game the first time you sit down and play it, I don't think. Unless you're like really, really good. You might have really good reflexes. That just might be your thing. You might be amazing. And that's fine. That applies to your specific skill set that you developed over time in your life with your specific abilities. The point being, when you reach Hades conclusion for the first time, it rolls credits, I believe, and then it restarts and you're allowed to progress the story through beating the game multiple times. So it's hard to say because there's so many different instances. Animal Crossing New Horizons, I brought up, there's a credits roll that you can get fairly quickly, but a majority of the game is after that credits roll, depending on when you get it. My view is that reviewers and critics should be candid about how much of the game they were able to play.
Yes.
The issue isn't, I demand and mandate. The Ministry of Video Games must demand and movement that all critics must play all of the game. Because that's it's not reasonable for like Final Fantasy 14. Like I can have can have a perspective on Final Fantasy 14 without having completed the entire game. And then there's people who take that to an extreme to say you 100% the entire game before you have a I just don't think so. But if you're candid about it in your review, like if I write a review now about Final Fantasy 14 and say I played up to this length and this is my opinion on what I played, I understand that there's content down the road. I haven't experienced it. That allows people who consume the critique to make up their mind on what have you, the quality of the game, whether they should buy the game themselves, whether they should recommend the game, whether they should get back into playing the game after updates, to come to a conclusion. Let me tell you, I would trust somebody's opinion on Final Fantasy XIV who has played through the whole game rather than my opinion.
Sure.
Right, Bill? Like if I told you, oh man, Final Fantasy XIV is trash. And then somebody who's put 500 hours into it to complete the whole story said, you know what? The best is yet to come. Whose opinion would you trust?
The one, of course, with the most time invested.
Because and that's experiential knowledge.
Of course. Right. Right, exactly. It's like, you know, I don't want to ask somebody who just moved to town what they think their favorite restaurant is if they've never left their
neighborhood. Right, they're like, you know, McDonald's?
I want to ask the person who's been there 30 years.
Exactly.
Like, hey, where's the cool spot to go? I think it's very interesting when I agree with you. Disclose, disclose, disclose. That to me is the number one thing. And I think like sports games are a good example of that. You have to play an entire season of NHL 2021 in order to say that the game is good. Mm-hmm. Can you just play a few games, right?
Right.
Do you have to do every single mode? I would say it depends on the genre of game, like you were just saying. A sports game, you should know what all the modes do, right? You should try to do the be a GM mode, try the trade stuff, like play with the game mechanics and play with the stuff that developers have presented to you. You know, in an RPG or in a long-term RPG, do I think you should play through the entire game? Honestly, I think it would be good if you did. I'd understand if you just mainlined it as a reviewer, because again, like you said, you got deadlines, and in the world of the internet, the deadlines are getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. You know, reviewers have less time. It's not like the magazine days where you had 2 months with these things. You don't. You got like 2 weeks, and you have to churn these out fast.
And that's why
embargoes and everything.
Yeah, you just forget about embargoes. That's what we do at thepixels.com. Is just here's the embargo. If I hit it, fine. But I don't need to be the first person to report on a game.
Right. And that's the big thing. So you want to be first on the scene. So
I get it. If you're IGN, if you're friggin' Polygon, if you're Game Informer, like you have to have that done.
Of course.
But myself running an indie site, I could take
it's also their job.
4 weeks. Right. Exactly. I could take 4 weeks to refine a critique on Metroid Dread so that I know what I'm talking about.
Correct.
But real quick before you move on, I mean, touching on that, you said you played a couple hours of Metroid Dread to refine what we're talking about. I would believe you if you talked about the gameplay. It's fast paced. You know, it can be difficult to get into because those are the things there. I would not believe you if you told me the story sucked because you haven't even seen it.
I haven't seen anything in the story.
Exactly.
Alp has a blue orb tell me to go to the surface and find the thing. Like I haven't experienced any story yet.
Right.
And you should not trust me. Like, oh, you know, the power-ups, they stink in this game.
Right.
I haven't got
–
don't even have the ability to turn into a ball, and it frustrates me. As a Metroid player, by the way, I should be able to turn into a ball. Where is my morph ball? What am I missing?
Yes.
I see all these things I can just – ball into
ball into as a verb. I can do a ball into things. So I mean that's something to consider too, is like it's still valuable when somebody shares an opinion. So like people will say all opinions are valid. No, all opinions are not valid. There's racist opinions, there's evil opinions, there's you know, just destructively angry opinions and so on, so resentful opinions and all these things. But an informed opinion is, I think, typically better than an uninformed opinion, but even within that sphere, you could still be uninformed on the macro and still be relatively informed on the micro. And I think that would be you if you told me about the gameplay. If you gave me what we call first impressions, that's what they are.
First impressions, exactly.
And that comes back to being candid, being transparent.
First impressions.
Yes.
I'm 3 hours in. I've gotten to this point, and here's what I think so far, which is actually a valid perspective too, right? Because that's a valid perspective. You know, not everything has to be from the perspective of someone who has completed it. There is value in those kind of first looks.
Exactly.
I do think that's it's interesting. So in the world of Metroid Dread, for critique to occur, I would say that yes, you would have to complete the game at least one time through in order to give a valid full critique on it.
Right.
I would think.
And we're using the term
reasonable ask.
Right. Full critique to mean you're talking about the entirety of the game. Right.
I can't tell you can't critique on the story if you haven't only read half the book.
Exactly. Exactly.
you just can't.
Right. I mean, you could go on Wikipedia and be like, the story sucks, I'll just finish the rest of you.
But it doesn't hit.
As you're not actually experiencing the thing. You're reading somebody else's reinterpretation, their paraphrase of the thing. And let's be fair, I mean, a lot of people get their opinions on games from other people's opinions on games, who likely got their opinion from other people's opinions on games. There's a snowball effect that way. Like when somebody publishes an article who's famous on a major publication and says, this game's too hard, it's brutal, you know, it's ableist, that causes people to believe that.
Sure.
So
it's human nature.
They might have been honest about what they were saying. I don't think that's an issue. But I just think that people who write critiques should be careful about what they write.
Careful is the correct terminology. It's I don't know if this will make the episode, but who knows? I still write for a local blog in town. I've been writing for them for almost 7 years now. And whenever I would do like a listicle, I would actually go to every restaurant I'm writing up. I'd go there, I tried the food, I'd take some pictures, write some stuff. So if I do a fish and chips article, I've spent a month going to fish and chips places for dinner, trying their stuff out, right? Because I want to have that experience and have that experiential kind of thing. And we've changed hands. The owners have changed a couple of times over the course of the last COVID, actually. Since COVID hit, the owners changed twice, got sold twice. And the new owners are more treating it like a business, which I get it, right? Blogs and the online world's a business, right? That's just what it is. They really are pushing these fast listicles, right? I don't like writing them fast because all that means is I can just go on Yelp, look up the reviews on a restaurant, say, oh, the chicken nuggets are great, and put that into an article, and it just feels hollow.
Right.
And I think that resonates to when people are reading it, because if you read it from the perspective of somebody who's been there and, I tried this fish and chips. It was amazing. Like, who needs the malt vinegar? Like, just dive in face first. Like that's that experiential knowledge is so much different than somebody who's can just, you know, steal it off of the Google reviews and like, oh yeah, great, the cheesecake's awesome. So it's really bumming me out about that is that, again, it's more about a time sort of thing, right? It's like, is there time and space in this world for that? I think reviewing is the same thing, right? It's that kind of, and also the gleaning of information from these reviews as well. It's much easier to just grab from the buffet of in the marketplace of ideas than it is to actually see for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, and let's be honest, that fits the era that we live in, where everything is immediate gratification. God forbid the stream I'm watching on Netflix starts, you know, stuttering or buffering. It was like, I must watch this at theater quality from start to finish all the way through. The microwave could not finish any faster. This traffic light is the longest traffic light that I've ever taken in my life. One thing that I've been dealing with pretty much since starting the Well-Read Mage persona is I got to sleep. You know how long that takes? I got stuff to do. And so I just think we've been trained against the longer, I don't want to say richer, but or even more profound, maybe more complex takes or the consumption of those. So I like take Twitter, for example. Twitter has a character limit. Twitter is geared towards the inflammatory tweets. Twitter is geared towards short, curt things.
Compressed.
Right.
Compressed ideas.
Whenever I do like a longer tweet, which has now been typically promotional tweets, they don't do great. But then I'll say something about this in short, you know what I would consider a witticism, then
or a declarative statement,
exactly. Yeah. Then those things sort of fly off, and we're all standing in this void of social media, and we all see these flashes of thoughts firing off. It's just easier to consume those things. So even with what I write, I mean, I wrote like almost a 3,000-word article on Metroid Dread. Not everybody's going to sit down and read a 3,000-word article. People would rather read the headline. And unfortunately for them, my headline is just the title, the year it released, and the console it's on. So you can't even get that from me.
Not much there.
Right. But it reminds me of a headline earlier today. Let me pull that up real quick. Critically acclaimed Nintendo Switch console exclusive is now available on PS4 and Xbox One. How's that for a headline when it turns out to be an indie game? So it's not even game that apparently was released on Windows in 2019. So it's not even a Switch console exclusive. But when you say that, you think like, oh my gosh, they put Mario Odyssey on PS4? No. They didn't.
Breath of the Wild? Yeah, seriously?
That would explode the internet. But
exactly.
That's how you catch people, right? We all know what clickbait is. We all know what headlines are. Yeah. And it works. If it wasn't pragmatic, it wouldn't work. But I think that's trained us against, going back to what we started with, trained us against being able to discuss what we mean to discuss. That's a, mm-hmm. a slam on myself. And then discuss those things in such a way that we don't resort to those quick witticisms and inflammatory insults. So I've had people tell me I'm toxic. I've had people tell, again, ableist.
Oh,
people
tell me. I read some of those.
Yeah. That I hate certain things. And again, this all needed clarification. But once it hits people who are actually like famous in those fields, I was like, that's an uphill battle, if anything. Might be a vertical uphill wall. So that was when I was like, I think I'm going to bail out, wait until I can rehash my ideas in my Metroid Dread critique. And then if people want to ask me questions about that, I can direct them to that.
Yeah. And here's the documents, if nothing else, the thought process. Right. So kind of turning it back onto Metroid Dread then, I don't write as many I haven't written many reviews for your site as I'd like to. It's just the show has been taking up so much of my time. It's just there's only 24 hours, right? But I do would like to get back to doing a little more writing for y'all.
You're always welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Whenever I did do those reviews, challenge or difficulty was always one of the 8-bit metrics, right? And I always look at that as not difficulty, because as we've kind of stated, difficulty can be very subjective. Mm-hmm. What's easy for me is impossible for my son.
Right.
It's just subjective. That's just what it is, right? But I always look at it as fair. Mm-hmm. Fair, I think, is a little more quantifiable. You can actually quantify fair a little easier than I think you can difficult, easy or hard.
Yeah, I think that what we need to admit is that difficulty or challenge we're using as layman terms because we're not ludological scientists or anything like that. But one of the difficulties with studying games and talking about games is there's no authority to appeal to, really. I mean, people appeal to Wikipedia. It's like, what are you doing? Like they cited a blog from like 20 years ago. Look at your citations. One of the difficulties with not having authority is there's no set definitions. I mean, we have slangs. We have terms that I think are subcultural and are used by various communities in different senses. And I think difficulty in a broad umbrella sense is exactly like that. You mentioned difficulty as fair. And mm-hmm. fair versus unfair. What is that? What does that mean? That is absolutely worth breaking down. What the video that I mentioned earlier discussed is difficulty as barriers, that games do not have difficulties. Games have barriers. Mm-hmm. To my perspective, that just takes the conversation one step backward, not in a negative sense, but it just removes the discussion from sort of an umbrella sense to one step backward to a more, again, the macro versus the micro sense. Mm-hmm. So with everything that we've discussed tonight, the gnosis, the experiential knowledge, with now challenge, and you're talking about like people's experiences are different. And that's where subjectivity comes in. You know, right. People will say nobody experiences the universe in exactly the same way. And that's absolutely true. But the fact that you and I are communicating based on shared, you know, agreed upon sounds that mean specific yeah. things means right. there's yeah. some sharing of objective quality.
There is standards. Right. There are standards exactly. of which things can be measured
right.
by.
We yeah. as separate, as subjective beings have agreed upon certain things within society. So right. when we say difficulty, again, that means context. So you mentioned your child. My kids can't play Metroid Dread. I mean, they asked to, and I let them fiddle around, and they died a couple times. And, you know, it's fine. But I don't expect that they're going to breeze through the game or beat the game in any way, shape, or form. I mean, they would need much more practice than I would because I'm an adult. There's a context there. I'm an adult, not just an adult, but I'm an adult who's been playing games for 30 plus years versus them who they're not even 30. So context is, I think, real important for that. When you – and I want to flip a question on you, Bill. Mm-hmm. When you say fair versus unfair, like what do you mean? What does that mean – as far as, say, draw like a specific mechanic from a specific game if you can, or if not, give us a hypothetical.
So I would say I probably have to give it a hypothetical because I think as you're talking, I was taking notes because I think there's another side of this I want to discuss mm-hmm. that may also lend more to what difficulty would be. But I see fair is this challenge in this particular game constructed in a way where the majority of people could complete it in a with a reasonable amount of aptitude. Mm. Does it average out to, okay, for example, let's say there's a platforming game. The worst platforming games we all know are the ones where you have to make the leap of faith jumps, right? Right? Or you have to be pixel perfect to the very, very edge of the platform you're leaping from to get to the very, very edge of your target. That is what I would call unfair because the margin for error is so slim that it's not really reasonable to ask the majority of people to do that at a decent amount of time with a decent amount of practice, mm-hmm. right? So that I would say fair is kind of in the construction of a game.
Right.
Is this fair? For example, in Metroid Dread, if I die in an Emmy area, I get taken right back to the door where I died mm-hmm. from. That's fair. I think that's a very fair failure tax.
Right.
I lost. There's my failure tax. I don't even know if you get your energy back or not. I don't remember.
I think you do.
If it refills your energy, that's even more fair. That's actually generous. Right. I'd label that as generous.
Yeah, generous is a term that absolutely popped up multiple times, just to make a parenthetical statement here. That, you know, people have discussed how brutal Dread can be. And yeah, when you have a hunter seeker robot that can instant kill you with a very tiny counterattack window, right. That's pretty brutal. But when you lose to that,
it
starts you off right there. It's not like you lose a ton of progress. That right. would be, I would say, lean towards unfair. But I think what you right. did is you nailed something specifically, and that is the blind leap. What is the blind yeah. leap as far as a nucleus? It is the game saying there's no way you can know about this hazard without, say, right. a trial and error, without just getting lucky. And I think that is unfair. Luck doesn't right. care about anything. Luck is just randomness. Randomness by its nature is not equity. Randomness by its nature right. is not justice. Randomness by its nature is not fair. So right. when a game does those things, and I love retro games, but a lot of them absolutely do that.
They're built on that.
Here's another bit that you can say with the undetectable hazard is when a boss does not telegraph its abilities. Mm-hmm. So in this game, there are absolutely telegraphs. They might be very short. Mm-hmm. I think the last boss in this game absolutely telegraphs its abilities. I'm trying to think of like a really early boss that you might have fought. Maybe the first one that has like a long tail can turn invisible.
I was just going to say that one. I'll just give you my experience mm-hmm. with it as someone who's only played it once. I don't think I died to it because I was prepared to play it like a Metroid mm-hmm. game where don't do anything with it. See what the patterns are. See what it's doing, and then maneuver around mm-hmm. it. And I think maybe I died once. I don't even think I did, but I remember being challenging. I remember being okay. This is tricky, and there's a couple stages. Mm-hmm. But it certainly telegraphs its motion. Like when it does the initial strike, that fast strike, mm-hmm. it rears back a sec.
Yeah.
And then it strikes. It's like, okay, when it rears back, I jump and I anticipate the attack and I move on. And it was very satisfying. It had that nice satisfying feel of a good boss design where, you know, it does telegraph, but you just have to learn it and experience it. But the opportunity is
right.
there.
And you took the time specifically to learn that. I did not. So I actually died. I think I died once or twice to it before I beat it.
I might have died once. I don't – just out of attrition. Right, you know, right, right. Just trying to – in the course of trying to figure out what the pattern
was. I got you. But, I mean, I'm not accusing you of it.
No.
But
I'm not getting great.
The fact that you took the time again being a factor that I think Dread requires from players – and I mean, if we're talking about requirements, if we're talking about barriers or demands, whatever that means in terms of difficulty, absolutely Dread is a demanding game. And I think that, you know, it demands that time as you go through the game, Bill, and I highly require that you play this. I highly recommend that you play through the entirety of Metroid Dread. I think if you found that first boss satisfying, you'll absolutely find the rest of the game fairly satisfying. It is
it's
a strong note. It's a strong flavor, but it's a good flavor. With a boss telegraph, with it reeling back its tail, with the camera panning underneath the monster is showing you its booty. That mm-hmm. tells you that, okay, this is what I do. I don't need to jump over the monster and get hit. I just need to pay attention. Right. And so that's fair. Now, if the monster suddenly turned invisible and started running across the screen, there's no way for you to jump over. There's no way for you to hit it unless you mm-hmm. slid under it and the game didn't tell you right. that. That's pretty dang unfair.
That'd be unfair. Right. Right. And that's what I talk about, the construction of the game elements itself. Mm-hmm. Is it fair? And again, you basically hit on it as well. And again, I think Metroid Dread, for the most part, for me, has been very fair. And like you said, almost generous. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to just pop back out when I went to the game over screen after the tool tips, come right back in. Oh, I'm right by the door. Wow.
Right.
Thanks, game. That's great.
Now, let me tell you about Metroid Dread's hard mode. The game has a hard mode. It's not, I don't want to be that guy, but it's not that much harder. But that's because all it really does is makes Samus take more damage from enemy attacks. So she essentially has less life. And then it weakens her damage. So bosses essentially have – bosses and enemies take longer to beat. Now, that is just a scaling thing, right? So people ask and have asked me, you know, would it have been so hard to just slap an easy mode on there? I've heard that numerous times, and I think that's alarming that people think, oh, you can just slap an easy mode on there.
Now, right. Yeah, I don't think anyone should assume.
Right.
Yeah, but I see where you're getting with, but I'll let
you know. Right, no, exactly. I mean, I'm glad we're on the same wavelength here. If you're implying, let me just slap an easy mode on there. Somebody said just take 10 hours to slap an easy mode on there. I've never been a developer. I don't know if it takes 10 hours to put an easy mode into the entire game. But let's say this, if the easy mode were to just scale in the opposite direction from hard mode And let's say Samus has twice as much health and enemies have, you know, half their health.
Right.
Does that actually make the game more accessible? It might make the game easier in that you can get through bosses faster. You won't die as many times. Emmys still kill you. You know, are we talking about having a slow motion in the game? Are we talking about removing bosses? Are we talking about removing the very reflex-based timing counterattack system, parrying abilities? Because those things require motor skills in terms of reflexes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at what point do you reduce the game to where it no longer resembles the finished product, I guess is the question. So, you know, some people have said people on one side, and I don't like phrasing it as like, oh, I'm on this side and you're on that side. That's the absolute nature of the subculture wars that we see for, unfortunately, virtually every new game release. That's a major release. There's always some controversy on it. And that's just the nature of social media, that it trains us to find, you know, different tribal sects to get into and treat them like our own religions and have jihad against each other with these things.
Right.
So, you know, I don't like saying I'm on this side or that side. People have accused me of hiding behind creator intent. I think that as a creator myself, my intent is primary. So when I create my novel, the intended experience of my novel is for you to read it in a certain way in English, because that's how I wrote it, or unless I translate it or have it translated, and so on and so forth. If somebody walks away from that story saying, oh, it's an excellent analogy for Star Wars, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. It's not. It's not every opinion is valid. Again, not every interpretation is valid. The creator's interpretation is what's primary. They would be wrong if they walked into it and said, oh, it's just a rehash of Crime and Punishment. It's not. It's not. Right. If you walk into Dread and think this should be an entirely fundamentally different game, I just can't get behind that. Now, what I can get behind are accessibility options, and I don't think you and I have talked about that yet. On behalf of Bifrost Bridge Studios, let me thank you for making the success of the Gaia Seed Kickstarter a reality. Having reached its goals, Bifrost, a transmedia graphic novel and conceptual design studio focused on autism and artificial intelligence, now sets its sights on the next chapter in the Gaia Seed universe. For more information on this budding narrative and how to empower young voices, you'll want to follow at StudiosBy on Twitter and visit patreon.com/Bifrost Bridge Studios. Don't miss the link in the description below. So accessibility options, specific examples. One that I really like was a game called Hue. H-U-E, game about color.
Mm-hmm.
The game had built-in color blind settings so that people can adjust those and play around with those until they find something that allows them to play the game in a certain way. So I'm not I would say I'm against the just mere reduction or scaling, because scaling doesn't seem to be all that meaningful, and then mere reduction essentially takes away from the intended experience, if we're going to use that term. Whereas infusing the game with specific accessibility options is, I think, an excellent thing to do for accessibility. So all that to say, I think difficulty, I stand behind the difficulty of Metroid Dread. Accessibility options, I stand behind the accessibility options that could have been in this game, I think. What those are specifically, I think, depends on the person who is playing those games. Because, again, I'm not going to presume that I know everybody's, you know, level of ability that is playing this game.
Right. I was taking some notes as you were talking, and when it comes to this concept of the easy mode, right, and in the context of Metroid Dread, because that is the big game now that's being talked about and what we're talking about, I think it's very interesting when you discuss what could you do to a game to reduce the difficulty. And you're right. I think a lot of people, including myself, maybe erroneously, have painted it in very broad strokes. Well, just give people more energy, or make the weapons hit harder, give the bosses less health, right? I think a couple of notes I took were developer discretion has to be paramount, as you, because it's basically saying the developer should be, it's up to their discretion whether or not they want to do that stuff. But even if they do, it may not be enough.
Right.
Right? So what may give me an advantage? Maybe it would give me a better advantage because I'll give you a very good example of this after this comment. Maybe a good example for Metroid Dread would be, I would love it if I had more health. That way I could take more hits. I didn't die as often on bosses. Everything else I'm good with. I'm good with the timing, but just for some reason, I'm just not good enough to get through the boss in a way that makes me happy, right? Or increases my enjoyment of the game, per se. Right? But maybe that doesn't help somebody else. So I guess the question really is, I am usually for easy modes. I am always for easy modes. With the understanding that it's not going to help everybody. That's the key. It's not going to help everybody. And because you can't.
And easy mode is not an end-all be-all for everything. It's just
not. It never is. It can't be, right? But I do think that it would be nice, and this is another side of it too, is I don't think a developer should be beholden to do this. No developer should be forced to do an easy mode or a hard mode or any mode, right? Normal, I would think that the normal should be the director's initial intent, their vision. Easy, or if it's a slider, or if they, you know, sports games get crazy with their sliders. You can change everything in a sports game. It's crazy, right? Or if it's a simple easy mode, you know, and again, disclose what that easy mode does. I think is good, you know, gives Samus 25% more health and increases reaction time by 0.25 or whatever, right? Little edge for easy mode. Now, that may not help a lot of people, but it may help somebody. And I think the more you can help people get through a game, again, if this is the developer's wishes or intent, I would think is a good thing, because at the end of the day, it's not hurting the initial intent of the developer. Now, like, to your point, though, these things that took me 30 seconds to describe, who knows how long it actually takes for a developer to do? And I think that's a really important point, something I don't think about a lot. It's easy for me to say, tune that down by 25%, turn that up by 25%. A developer has built this game specifically to be tuned to a certain feel and a certain vibe and a certain challenge, right? They've designed this game to be played in 6.5 hours, 7 hours, not 3.
Right.
So if you can't turn those sliders without something else going out of balance. So it's probably not as easy to do that. So it's a very interesting point when you discuss about developers.
There is an entire section of development that must take place, and that's testing, right?
Yeah,
right. Q&A. There absolutely has to be. I mean, I'm sure you've played some games where they did not do that. Like, I've played some games where, like, how did they not catch this in quality assurance? Like, they absolutely should, because it's literally on the title screen. I get it that some smaller developers, some smaller studios can't afford it, can't do it in as reliable of a sense, don't have as much time, resources, so on and so forth.
Right.
So, you know, accepting all of that. Games, I don't want to say cannot be perfect, but games can't. I don't want to get into a can of worms there, but just in brief, I think that if you're going to give a game a solid 10 out of 10, that's the highest possible score. What you mean is that score can't get any higher. You can't add or subtract anything from that game that will, without meaningfully, you know, something meaningful to add or subtract without doing damage to the game. That you're saying this is perfect in terms of it is whole. It's done. Yep. All that said, now, when you start getting into, you know, there's all these other things with quality assurance that should have been caught, you know, what time resources and what financial resources developers may have, the mistakes that they make because of those financial and temporal limitations.
Sure.
It happens. I mean, that's a reality of the creative process. I mean, you and I both know I've never created a video game. I can't speak for you, but I've never created a video game.
I'm not.
But we've created other things, and we know that within, you know, a certain time limit, this has to be done. You know, otherwise it's that novel sitting on a laptop in your closet, you know, for 20 years
ago. And Yeah, I at some point the work has to be complete or it's not a work.
Exactly.
It's not a thing then. It's a draft.
And there would be no Metroid Dread if it was an infinite draft. So it has to be done at some point. Again, that being said, well, so like one thing I was thinking of to mitigate, not just how much damage you take, because I don't, again, I think that's a difficulty thing. That's just a scaling. But let's say the game was more forgiving in terms of the amount of time necessary to land one of those reflex-based counterattacks. So like if the game actually slowed down when an enemy had that little yellow flash, sure. That could be something that appeals to people who don't have the reflexes necessary to get through that specific mechanic. But I think, mm-hmm. you know, easy mode and accessibility options, two different things.
Yeah. Two different things, yes. They blur.
They do.
They blur a bit.
They do.
They blur, right? Like in that example, you just said, you know, if you someone's motor skills may not be sharp enough to land that counterattack, mm-hmm. right? The first question I have is that counterattack required to complete the game? In Metroid Dread, it is not. It's a bonus. Maybe I haven't got it. I am actually really good at countering, so I'm not even concerned about that. I don't know if there's a point where it is required. I don't know. So that's
Without specific spoilers, you cannot beat the game without getting successful counterattacks off. There are certain encounters that downright require it to happen.
Okay. I probably haven't reached those.
And that's fine. I mean, again, like what we discussed earlier, like I can't expect you to know this entire game. You haven't played the entire game. But I want to say last boss specifically, you have mm-hmm. got to land. There are some late game enemies. You have to land the counterattack in order to defeat the enemy. And so that's a built-in system. I don't think you can just remove that from Metroid Dread.
Yeah, right. And that's, I think, again, that's what the hard thing about the easy mode conversation is. It's like, well, what do you think an easy mode is? And as soon as you get someone's opinion on it, it's subjective because it could be totally different. Maybe not for me, not removing that counter is not going to help me.
Right.
Here's an example. Here's my example for why my thesis statement on easy modes are, I wish developers would include difficulty options for games, no matter what that game mm-hmm. is. I do not require that, but if you would, I would really, really mm-hmm. like it. It would be neat if you did, if you can.
I think
sometimes you just can't.
Yeah.
And I respect that. You know, but so here's my example for this mm-hmm. conversation. Have you ever played Bloodborne?
No.
Okay.
I've actually I avoided the whole Soulsborne genre.
So vibe.
A while of reasons, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, here you go. Here's reason number 8022.
Okay.
I received Bloodborne as a gift. Okay. Many Christmases ago, I got it as a gift. And I pop it in, and I love the look of that game, the world. It just, I don't know, it just looks like it would be my jam. If only I could play it, because I am miserable. And I mean miserable at that game. Now, the opening level of Bloodborne, it's almost like the tutorial section, mm-hmm. is you go through and it's trying to teach you the timing, because everything in that game is parrying and striking and parrying, blocking and striking. And it's all timing based. And I cannot figure out the timing of that game to save my life. I cannot do it consistently. And in that section, there is nothing you can do to grind up your experience, get more weapons. Nope, nothing saves. You have to reach a certain point and defeat a certain boss before you get to the point where you can start collecting, building up your experience and getting new weapons, getting new armor, you know, start building your character. Mm-hmm. The game is basically saying, if you can't master this little piece without help, you can't play this game.
Right.
And I tried, I've done it twice. This is not an accurate count. I think I did like 6 hours the first time, and I tried for another 4 separate. So I tried 10 total hours of game time. I can beat certain indie games, beat whole games in the time it took me to get through this one section of Bloodborne.
Yeah.
And it really bummed me out because I would love for there be a difficulty setting. Like, can I just knock this down to easy? Mm-hmm. Can I just knock this down to like a medium mode? I try everything at normal. I want to, what your, I assume normal is your vision from a developer as what is reasonable challenge for most people to experience. What's reasonable. And if, but since there is no easy mode, I go online and the other answer that from the Bloodborne community was, sorry, tough, figure it out, play it more.
Exactly. Literally, yeah,
I had one person say to me, he's like, yeah, I think of that. Yeah, I get that's a pain in the neck. And they were sympathetic. They were like, yeah, I get that's a pain, but it's kind of like the weed out course, you know, in Bloodborne. I'm like, weed out course? This is not organic chemistry for my bio degree. Weed out.
What,
like, I can't just change majors.
But Bill, when you say, you know, that the intended perspective of the developer is paramount.
Yeah.
Then in this case, the intended perspective of the developer is there is no easy mode.
I get it.
We are going to make a hard game. And in that sense, do they have to appeal to everybody? No.
No.
Are they going to suffer for that? Maybe in terms of reputation or lost sales? This is a question that somebody asked me. Well, what if a hard game loses out on sales because it's not accessible, because it's too hard for most people? And I told them that's literally how the free market works. If people don't buy it, they stop making it.
Yeah, that's really it. It's like saying, hey, I wrote this really challenging novel, you know, and it's like a lot of people have a hard time reading it. It didn't sell well. Well, I made a challenging novel that wasn't intended for a lot of people, maybe. But here's my thing. Here's the thing then with Bloodborne. I would never require FromSoft to put in a difficulty level. Mm-hmm. If that is your tent pole, even though, in my opinion,
it makes the game unplayable.
It makes it unplayable. For me, it's unplayable.
Yeah.
But it's also preventing those who cannot conform to your challenge level. Mm-hmm. It prevents people from experiencing your story, the art design, your sound choices, the amazing world of Bloodborne, which looks super my jam. Like, I look at that and I'm like, oh, that is so up my street. Like, everything has my name on it. But I can't experience it because you've chosen, as a developer, to make challenge a tentpole of your game design. Like, that's who we are. If you, and this is with me, and this may sound crazy and silly, my number one thing is I now know not to buy FromSoft games.
Because exactly.
I am gamer guy
who
had gamer experience, has gamer friends, and is on gamer Twitter, and knows if these things are a pain in the ass or not. I feel bad for those who don't have that information, nor who either don't have the ability to gain that information or just aren't aware.
Mm-hmm.
Who waste their money. Yeah. I think developers should disclose some of this stuff on the package or on the description. Not crazy. I'm not going to crazy a rating system. Like, we're not going to crazy. But this game does not include adjustable difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Boom! Now you know. So when a parent someplace, you know, looks at the Amazon wish list and sees Metroid Dread on there, you know, and looks at little Johnny who's 10, and says, "Oh, that's cool. He can play that game." Sure, buys it for little Johnny. Little Johnny's playing it on Christmas Day. He's getting murdered by Emmys left and right. Can't get through the damn thing. No recourse to change his difficulty, make it a little easier, a little harder. And his Christmas is ruined. And I know we're not talking about like life or death stuff
right,
here.
Right.
We're not talking about like bread and water and food shelter.
We're talking about an 8-year-old whose guardian bought them a rated M game for Christmas.
Is it rated M? I don't even know.
Oh, Bloodborne. I thought we were talking.
I'm talking about Dread.
Oh no, Dread is T for team. Yeah. I was like, I mean, this is a hypothetical situation. It could happen.
Sorry, I was saying Metroid Dread.
It's all good.
I was saying Metroid Dread. But anyway, like, bought Metroid Dread because she saw it. And again, but the idea is that the parent or guardian has no, they don't know what Metroid Dread is. They see a game in the Amazon wish list catalog and says, oh, yeah, cool, that's fun. His Christmas is ruined. And it's a waste of money. And yes, again, I know this is like very minor problems. Like you're fond of saying is this is for entertainment. These are luxury things
right.
we're talking about. These are not life and death things, right? This is not So obviously, I wouldn't want to see like someone being legislated to do this. That's outside.
That would be the last thing
that's outside I would the bounds see. Yeah, of anybody. But yeah. I think you should at least disclose it, even, right. especially accessibility. This game does not include accessibility for color or includes colorblind options. That's awesome, right? That'd be great for someone to know. Oh, hey, my best friend Joey. You'll hear him on the show all the time. He's colorblind. Like he cannot see a lot of colors and. He's had experiences in his life playing games that were all, hey, hit this color button to make this thing happen.
Can't do it.
You know, yeah. And he can't do it. Yeah. And he has a really hard time with it. So
now, let me ask you a question on that, going back to Bloodborne. If Bloodborne had colorblind accessibility options, would that make the game easier for you?
Well, no, the game is basically black.
Right. Well, I mean, for one thing, but like, let's say just for, you know, some bosses, like before they die, they're like, oh, hit this red shiny bit. Don't hit the blue shiny bit or I get all my life back. Something like that, right? So those specific accessibility options are geared towards certain audience members, right?
Correct. As all that kind of stuff is.
Yeah. So Bloodborne, a specific example, I agree. I mean, I think being candid, being transparent about the content of the games is something. I was reminded of, you know, like asking them to put "This game is hard" on the cover reminded me of the whole Earthbound thing. This game stinks marketing. Where it's like, I don't know if that hit quite really.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's not saying harder. 'Cause again, challenge is subjective. So again, what's easy for me is hard for somebody else.
I think you would need some kind of standardization for that.
A little bit, yes. I would say so.
Not necessarily ESRB level, but some kind of, you know, grading says, like, you know, this is rated, you know, like how they rate jalapenos, right? They're like, this is 10 Scoville units compared to like 5.
We need the gaming version of Scoville units?
Yeah.
I would actually say even soften it even more and just say, like I was saying before, this game does not have adjustable difficulty, you know, like, because you're basically saying this is geared to what you get is what you get here. So if you purchase this game, there is no opportunity in the game to make this easier or harder. You get what you get.
Right. And this is absolutely where there's a benefit. I mean, so, you know, not to sound like an old man, but we have been deriding and complaining about the modern era, myself. Certainly. And the one good thing about – well, not the one good thing, but one of the good things about the modern era of gaming is that you don't really need to make uninformed opinions or uninformed purchases. I beg your pardon.
True.
You don't really need to make uninformed purchases because before the game even launches, you typically – especially for big games, you typically have an array of reviews and critiques and gameplay footage that you can consult to know. Now we know FromSoft has a reputation.
Right. But, so I know. Right.
Right. So, and that kind of harkens to another thing that I encounter frequently. And I think that this is like such a common refrain that it's like people read it on a bathroom wall and they're like, oh, that must be true.
Oh, God.
And that is when people are like, but what if somebody just wants to play it for the story? What does that mean, Bill?
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody asked, and somebody told me this, well, what if somebody wants to play Metroid Dread for the story? I mean, people can want anything. What if people just want to play Metroid Dread because they got the hots for Samus? They don't want to see anything else. They just want Samus. Does that mean the developer has to take everything else out of the game just to make a Samus dating simulator because that one person wants it? I think that at a certain point, and I'm not talking about accessibility options.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay, because there are real people living with real issues that they're dealing with. I'm not talking about hypothetical stuff, but I think that consumers can be extremely demanding. You haven't done that tonight because you're awesome, but a lot of the people that I talk with can be extremely demanding. If you say, you know, can't I just play Metroid Dread for the story and skip all the rest of it, skip the game, then what are you playing? You're playing a movie.
You can go on YouTube. And
exactly.
Watch a playthrough.
If you want the story, just go and watch a Let's Play. Those can be out by day one sometimes, or you can watch somebody stream the game live. Mm-hmm. You could see their reaction while they play the game for you. Let's plays and walkthroughs and cutscenes being lifted. I watched the entirety of Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots, several years before I actually played the entire game. So I got the story. I knew exactly what the story was. I didn't get the gameplay because I didn't have the system, but I got the story. So I really think that that is not a disingenuous, because I think that people say it, you know, really meaning well.
Yeah, it's a shorthand. I think it's a shorthand kind of thing. I think when people say I want to play it for the story, it's a shorthand for a, and this is the kind of term I was working my way up to. Mm-hmm. We're talking about fair. The other side of challenge is also friction. Mm. And I like friction. Frictionless experience is what people want. They want to just, and this is not a knock. One of my best podcasting buddies, Mr. Mike Alberton of Games My Mom Found, love the man. He is a good egg. He will take every cheat in a game he can. He plays it on easy, easy, easy. He plays a lot of games for his show. He plays one game a week. He has to get through them fast.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't do it for the game, he still likes it easy. He doesn't like friction. He wants to slide through the game and get them done as fast as he can and move on to the next, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's not a knock. It's how he wants to play. It's how he enjoys playing games. If that's what brings him joy, then listen, I have no complaints about it, mm-hmm. right? But most people, that's kind of what I think about. It's like someone just wants a frictionless experience.
Right.
They want to go through the game. They don't want to have much pushback in terms of challenge or anything, and they just want to experience the, again, story is like that upfront one, but mm-hmm. the experience of the game. They want to experience the game without, you know, they want to swallow the food without chewing.
And if you're not playing the game, you're not experiencing the game.
I totally agree.
That's the thing, right?
Number one, totally agree. Right. I've tried, and it's always been like, man, I wish I was playing the game.
Right. And
because
some people
of the nature of games
don't
and it's interactive.
Yeah. And that's totally fine.
Which is fair.
They just need to know what they want, right? So, like, what is passive entertainment? Dude.
Well, passive entertainment is nearly anything that's not games, basically.
Right. Well, I mean, like, let's say, like, reading's work, right? I mean, it can certainly feel like work.
Okay.
And you need a grasp of language in order to, you know, get through this stuff, and you don't want to be dragging out dictionaries and things like that. I think one, like, really passive form of entertainment is music. You don't even need to watch anything.
I love
it. Like, it uses literally one sense.
I have some very I won't say poetic. I have very strong opinions on the nature of music as art. And I think actually, total digression, this will go into a side quest somewhere. I think music is the most purest art form because it only requires one sense. It requires one sense and there's no prerequisite to enjoy it. Like
now,
I could listen to like an amazing cumbia or a samba and not understand a word of Spanish, but man, I can still ingest that. Like, there's nothing better for me, and I don't do it enough. Mm-hmm. Like, sit with some good headphones, close my eyes, and just listen to music.
Yeah,
like now,
I don't want to throw this on you and be like,
it's okay,
and be like, well, deaf people enjoy music too.
They do.
It's different, right? They feel the music.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I worked with individuals who had degrees of hearing impairments.
Okay.
One individual that I worked with, he listened to music on his phone by putting his hand on his phone. And that was how it worked for him.
Loved it. Love that.
So, you know, we're talking about these things. Again, in general senses, the difficulty with that you frequently encounter is when somebody accuses you of being villainous because you didn't bring up every single instance in which somebody can potentially consume music.
True.
But that's not what I don't think that's fair to people to do that. Yeah. Because when we speak, we don't automatically say this is true and then this is true and list like 20 different things that are clarifiers to that initial thing.
There
we
are
just
some,
can't do
you
that.
Can we can imply that either you're not aware of something or you just missed it.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Or we can just not accuse people of being a-holes. You know, when they don't clarify like absolutely every potentiality. True. So
anyway, yes,
music. Passive entertainment, movies, again, you're watching and listening, but music, very, very passive, I think. You can just put music on and it exists in the background. We can consume it even without being like actively conscious of it, which I think is like really fascinating.
It's a yeah. Music is best enjoyed as passively as possible.
Right.
Honestly.
Right.
Or sitting and actively listening is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, I love listening to music and driving and just like singing and not even like thinking about the words because I just know the words from memory and I love that. But I don't think that games are anything like that in a lot of ways. And I mean games just broadly. There may be specific games. Oh, this is something. Bill, I don't know if you saw this.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. I once put out a statement about graphics being the requirement for what is a video game. People took that to mean that blind people cannot play video games.
Oh, come on.
Oh,
now.
My goodness. That's absolutely not what I meant.
Oh, no.
So come I linked on, to – I had to do this again and again because people don't read the comments. They just see the statement.
They see the tweet.
Right. And people, how dare you? There are streamers who are visually impaired who have done this. How could you – you're a terrible, toxic individual because you don't know that this person does this. First of all, not even remotely what I meant. I'm familiar with people who have visual impairments who play games through those limitations. Now, what I did mean is that you have to have a video component in order to have a video game. What people shared with me then, because people love to argue, what people then said is like, well, haven't you heard of this sound game? Sega made a sound game. There's another game that's just a sound game where you use sounds to kind of maneuver through this. Interesting experiment, but guess what? There's still a visual element to that. There's still a UI that you have to use in order to switch the game on and turn it off. There's still a static screen or a black image. In one case, one game had like an image of like a black screen with mist over it. That's a graphic. People, that is a video. That's essential to this. So when we talk about video games and people saying, I just want to play it for the story, you're not playing it if you don't play it. I don't know why that has to be said, but evidently it does.
A base level of interactivity is required for it to be a game.
A game, right? Exactly. Otherwise, it's just a video. And that's fine. If you want to consume the game as just a let's play, then you're consuming it as a video. But if you're asking the developers to create a video game that's not a game by skipping all the gameplay, skipping all the boss fights, skipping everything, basically loading up the game, pressing A at the title screen, and seeing every cutscene in there till the credits, you're watching a movie.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think when people do use that term, though, it's a shorthand for I want to play the game. I want to jump around, but I just don't want the friction.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where that is. But you're right. The fact that you've had to argue this point, require interactivity in order to be a game. Like you can't play checkers without picking up the pieces.
Right.
Like, come on now.
I mean, that goes well past difficulty. That goes past the definition of exactly what the nature of the thing is. So again, I think the people who say those things mean well. What if somebody just wants to experience the game or experience the story because they don't have time? I can empathize with that. I don't have time to experience everything, but there are features in our modern world that allow you to do those things.
And I would also say, though, in support of that person who says that, because again, I understand the heart behind that. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. Do I want Metroid Dread to have an easy mode right now at this moment personally as dad with two kids and who does a very demanding podcast and has a demanding show? Do I? No, I don't really don't. At this moment, I feel like when I play the game, I can play for an hour and change. I make progress. I a few times I'll have to like say, okay, where am I going next?
Right.
Then I do a thing that a lot of games don't make you do is I sit and look at the map. I go, okay, well, I've been here. I can't go there. Oh, wait, there's a thing there. That must be the answer. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it is. Of course it is, because that's the only option, because the game is designed by people who know what they're doing.
Right.
I'm not going to get myself stuck. I'm sure there's a solution to my problem, and usually it's there within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
But I can also – so here then that leads to the question, what difficulty or what easy mode setting would help you play that game to experience just a story in that, with that – with that. And again, that's going to change for a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. if you're like me, or if you're like someone who gets stuck in games, again, I was able to figure it out pretty quickly, but you know, Metroid Dread doesn't tell you where to go. There's a little, again, as far as I can know, there's like, sometimes there's one point on a dark part of the map and it tells you get there. And like Ori does the same thing. Mm-hmm. Hollow Knight does the same thing. Like there's a basic kind of sort of direction. They don't completely leave you stranded, but you got to figure out how to get there. That's part of the challenge and the fun of the game is exploring and navigating to those points of interest. So if someone wants to play the game just for the story, well, what do you want? Do you want the developers to, again, make it less friction so you have more health? Do you want to move faster? Do you want a line through the map that kind of shows you what to do? Like, that's where the question is, if you give somebody an easy mode, what does that easy mode actually mean? And is that really going to be beneficial? Or are you just including the easy mode to hopefully capture the most amount of issues somebody could have, and for those other people who just get stuck and need a guide to get their way around, mm-hmm. well, there's a go on IGN. I'm sure they built a guide for this already.
Right.
It's an interesting question, which I don't think lends itself to easy answers.
No.
My take is always, and this may be just be me being a not sympathetic. I don't know. But it's just my thing is always, I love when games provide easy modes. I don't often use them. One of my previous guests I was talking about it with, and he is a huge proponent of these easy modes. And the funny thing is, irony, he's the kind of person who platinums and 100% everything. He's the king of challenge.
Nice.
he is on the PlayStation, on the PSN network, on just PS3 and PS4 and PS5, he has 269 platinums.
Wow.
Out of 400 games played, like that's what he does. That's his thing is platinuming games. It's a very interesting conversation. But he's also a big proponent of easy modes. And he had a friend who was playing this one particular game and he kept banging his head against the wall on bosses. The bosses were really hard. And he almost just banned the game. He almost did me with Bloodborne, just abandoned it. Like, forget this. And he said to his friend, well, I'll just kick it down to easy. He did so, blew through the boss, but realized the rest of the game was way too easy now. Hmm. Like, way too easy. So he just kicked that back up to normal. Gets to a boss, easy, beats the boss, back up to normal. And he was able to have a really fun experience. And I think that's great because that guy was able to complete a game that he probably wouldn't have done if the developer hadn't gone through the extra steps, we'll just say, or gone through the process of putting together an easy mode. So I think they are a good thing, and I don't think developers need to do it, but man, I wish they did.
Yeah. And you know what's primary there is agency. When we talk about easy mode and difficulty, you know, settings, we're talking in broad sweeping strokes. Oh, got that confused. To just say this game needs to be easier. What does that mean? This game needs to, you know, allow people to experience the story. People have different, you know, abilities. People have different capabilities. With Metroid Dread, some people told me I got lost and gave up. Some people told me I never got lost. What's the difference? Which is the larger demographic? We don't know. The developer certainly doesn't know. Mm-hmm. But what you just described is awesome. I think that's an amazing feature when a game lets you change difficulties within the game itself, not just from the title screen on a new save. Because that allows the player a level of agency in which they can freely choose and recognize what is too easy for them and what is too hard for them without fundamentally changing the game, without right. reduction, without scaling, in broad senses, but allowing the player to say, I'm going to need this at this instance. There were parts in Metroid Dread, and one of the hardest battles that I fought is like this twin battle. Twin boss fight. It took me forever, more times than the final boss. Wow. And I just thought it was brutal. And there was really nothing I could do about it. I think that I was actually locked in the next room. So I could not backtrack to find other you know, assists in terms of items or ability acquisition. I just had to throw myself against that boss fight, like waves crashing against a cliff over and over until I was able to either get lucky or develop enough reflexes and get enough practice in to beat that encounter. If the game has had the ability for me to change, I actually don't know because I didn't think about seeking it out if Metroid Dread has this or not. Mm-hmm. If it does, awesome. I could have used it then if you could just, you know, scale it down. Well, no, I guess not because I was playing on normal when that first happened. That was my first playthrough. So I couldn't. There was nothing I could do about it. Now, if there was something that would let me kind of drop that down, awesome. I might have been able to get through that. Did I need to? I could have saved 4 hours. Sure. I mean, I don't know if it took that long. I'm just pulling a number out of the head. I could have saved time doing it, and that would have been amazing as a gift to me as the player. But if people get stuck on a game and they give up, especially when it's a game like Metroid Dread, I feel empathy for that. I mean, that to me is tragic. They not only spent the money, but now they can't consume the product.
Yeah.
So
it's a shame.
It is a shame.
And again, we can't make it so everybody can consume everything. You can't, obviously. No. I mean, it's unless you're Nintendo and you can just Yoshi float over the entire level. And, which again float. Is a different.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you a funny story real quick about that, but remind me to tell you a Mario Kart 8 story with my son. But I think if you can at least give the opportunity to reduce the amount of friction. Mm-hmm. In a game, if you smooth the edges a bit for people who need smoother edges and understand that you're not going to hit everybody, because again, like I said, what does smoother edges mean for you? What does smoother edges mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's completely subjective because difficulty is subjective. I think that's actually a net good. And I think that is a good thing that games can provide to people, that just give them the opportunity to experience their games and all the other amazing things about it that game may not particularly that challenge may be the barrier to. Mm-hmm. You know, or that friction may be the barrier to. I always hesitate to call it gatekeeping, and I know people do. Mm. It's a really feels odd to me to call that gatekeeping, because again, gatekeeping implies a purposeful, directed blocking of something.
Mm-hmm.
Of saying you can't do something for this reason, where again, difficulty is not that, is so subjective.
Right.
I know people call that use that term.
No, I think I know what you mean. I think the difference is person, right? Yeah. You're directing, gatekeeping is directed to like a person or a group of persons. Or a
group of people.
Right.
Correct.
Whereas difficulty is so general. It's built into a product that is not like, hey, this product is for you, Jeff. You know, to consume right. as an individual. This product right. is for everybody who lives in the great state of Alabama. Like, intentionally, right? Like, there's no direct intentionality there. Obviously, there's sales demographics and that sort of thing. But there's no – it's like when a game releases, people don't have to take it as a personal insult.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a very good point, yes. Yeah, it's exactly right. And I – So yeah, I think that's kind of where my thesis lands on that is I would love it if y'all could developers could put in those difficulty things, and I wish people would be understanding if they're not there or if the easy mode doesn't make it easy for you because there are situations where it just may not.
Yeah.
So it may not be the issue that you have 25% more power or enemies die 25%. Faster. It could be the fact that I don't know where the hell I'm going in this game. where I shoot at everything and nothing opens up. Metroid, where am I going?
It could be more embarrassing. Did you catch the I think he was one of the developers or directors from God of War who on live stream didn't catch a visual cue and just tore into the game design when it was not a problem for a lot of other people.
Interesting.
I think that, you know, we can all make fun of folks like, Dean, who, you know, infamously struggled with the Cuphead tutorial. You remember that, right?
Oh, yes.
The thing
yes,
with
yes,
Dean, though, is he made the clarification afterward that, hey, I'm not used to this genre. And that's fair. I mean, nobody's used to every single genre. You can't be versed on everything. Nobody can. So I think that's a key difference. If people are going to make mistakes, which people do make mistakes because that's human existence. I'm not saying human existence is a mistake, but just we make mistakes, you know? So when we do, then just, you know, don't blame it on the game. That's the thing, is we're so ready to villainize the game or the developers when it's really, it could really be user error.
Right, and exactly. And there are and there are some games out there that are just hard for no reason and unfairly so via construction with lots of friction built in. And it's just like, well, that's just, that's not great. Not
Kaizo Mario.
Yeah, exactly, right. I'll tell you a quick story. This might wrap it up pretty well. Sure. Because I do think people in the end, whether they know it or not, want to be challenged a bit. Mm. I think that's kind of part of human nature. The desire to succeed or desire to do better, I think that is part of, because I think that's built into our DNA at some point. Example, my son with Mario Kart 8, he's 5 now. And he's been playing Mario Kart 8 for a while, but I've always turned on the easy stuff. I turned on the adaptive steering. I turn on the auto acceleration. I've been doing it since he was like 3 and change, like 3 and a half. And he loves it. He plays and he wins. He actually had a situation because he plays it in his hand. He doesn't like it on the big screen. He just likes to sit there. He actually had to go to the bathroom, so he put the game down, forgot to pause it, got up, went to the bathroom, came back, still in fourth place. So the game was literally playing itself. Like, he could not have lost, right? So anyway, this was yesterday. He, Daddy, can I play Mario Kart 8? Yeah, sure. Hand the game. And I'm doing something with my daughter. I look up and I'm like, I think, did I turn the stuff on for him? Ooh. So I kind of look over his shoulder. Now, mind you, my son, when he plays games on the Switch, he doesn't just hold it in front of him like a human. He like throws it around the room like he's playing VR. Like it's like, Daddy, watch me play. I'm like, dude, you're going to figure eights and you're driving a circle. Like, I'm going to vomit. I can't do that. So I glance over, and in Mario Kart 8, if you have the adaptive stuff on, there's a little antenna that kind of glows yellow if it's pulling you back in. It's kind of signaling, hey, it's trying to teach, I guess, the player, I'm pulling you back in purposely. Mm-hmm. There was no antenna. So my dude was playing it by himself.
You become a man.
And he was like, he was in third place.
That's awesome.
So he sees me, and now he's all distracted. His character just flies into a wall. He starts going backwards. So he goes to me, Daddy, help me. And I went, nope. Figure it out. Now you can figure it out.
The equivalent of the bird kicking the baby bird out of the nest.
No, because mama bird saw baby bird actually doing okay without him. It was kind of the equivalent of letting your kid ride a bike without training wheels. Yep. Right? In the end, that's what they want. They don't want the training wheels on. They want to do without. But it was literally felt like I was kind of – when I was teaching him how to ride his bike and my wife was – like, starting him, letting him go, and then he'd fall, and you're like, God dang it. And then sure enough, he's able to do it. So it was a really cool moment where I realized, you know, he doesn't need these things after a while. And sometimes with challenge and difficulty sliders and difficulty settings, that could be encouraging for somebody to, hey, I beat this on easy. Maybe I can do this on normal. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can do this on hard. Right. And then who knows, maybe down the line they're playing Bloodborne, right? Because they got that entry point, didn't have as much friction on it. They were able to get into a genre and get into a game or get into a series. And then just by the nature of people wanting to improve, I really do think that's a thing. No scientific evidence, just I think that's a thing. Just people wanting to improve and get better at stuff. Who knows where that could lead, right? So I'm very glad my son can now play Mario Kart without me having to grab it from him and put on the easy mode stuff.
That's awesome.
And it was a cool dad moment from yesterday.
That's learning. I mean, because what is the point of parenthood? It's to teach our children to be independent.
Yeah. Right?
It's to help them into adulthood. And like, if a game can do that in those terms, that's amazing. The training.
Cool. And the training wheels, and he just went without the training wheels and he discovered it and he ended up, I think, getting third place, I think, overall. And he was very pleased with himself, and it was great.
That's awesome.
So, anyway, challenge, subjective, and yeah. I think we landed on some good stuff, man. I think we did.
Yeah. I had some apprehension that we would massively disagree. I don't think that happened.
No, I don't think so either. I think I might have ended up or landed it, because you made some really good points about what does difficulty mean to different people and how are you going to achieve that. And that is such an interesting point. And the fact that developers need to do this, and there's timelines and budgets, right?
Yeah.
And there's visions, and I'm sure the designers of Metroid Dread, as again, the little I've played, they went through great lengths to balance that game out. That is you can tell. It's a beautifully tuned game. I mean, it doesn't take long to figure that out. And I'm sure stuff's going to be really hard in the future of that game, and I'm actually looking forward to it, to, you know, and really try to piece it together and examine and say, all right, what is this boss going to do, and, you know, figure it out. But yeah, man, I think I might be a little more a little more in the easy mode camp, mm-hmm. but I definitely think I have a better appreciation of what that would mean and some of the, to not say it as flippantly as I think a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Just give it an easy mode. Just throw an easy mode on there.
The word that was popping in my head is cavalier, to not be so offhand about it. Just, yeah, it just needs an easy mode, but it's like, what does easy mode mean?
What does it mean? Right. And be specific. Say, you know, I really think this game could use an option where you take less damage because, you know, Metroid is a game where you are very tanky. It's just kind of what Metroid is. You take damage. It's kind of the way the game is designed, although evidently this game is not. But historically, Metroid is the kind of game where you just take damage and it can be like push and pulls. You can say, well, I think this, if there was an option to take less damage, I think it would make the game easier. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Okay. There's lots of other stuff, though.
Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot.
That makes it hard.
Yeah. So, yeah. Not to be overly casual or flippant about it.
Right.
It's everything we talk about is geared towards that kind of discussion. But I mean, look at the discussion that we just had. There is so much minutia that we covered. There's so much specificity that was brought to bear because we're talking about literally millions and millions and millions of individual creative works, some of them that have very little similarity shared between them. So there's no way to just be like, let's just slap an easy mode on everything. You just can't do that. And even if you could do that, that doesn't actually solve accessibility issues. It doesn't. So two different things.
Yeah, and it's funny because when it comes to like frictionless play too, I actually really enjoy walking simulators.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really like them. I think they're extremely interesting intersections of between games and, you know, movies, or what makes a game a game. Kind of like what is an interactive experience. Mm-hmm. I think they're really cool intersections. And when they're done well, they're great. When they're done poorly, they're horrible. And there's some really bad ones out there. Even ones I've played quite a few of them. I actually wanted to do, before this show, I wanted to do a podcast on walking simulators. And I realized that's a very niche audience. I actually might do it for like a Patreon thing, like like once a month as a Patreon bonus. Bring somebody on and talk about different walking simulators.
Phew, that one was a doozy. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to visit patreon.com/thepixels if you're interested in helping to support the work of indie critics and podcasters. Or check out thepixels.com, that's the-pixels.com, for more magic. Find me on Twitter @TheWellReadMage or on Twitch under the same moniker. This episode may be over, but the legend will live on, passed down by the dwarves, the elves, and the dragons.